Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century on Blue Ridge Public Radio. I'm Dr. Marcia Mount Shute.
And I'm Coach John Shute.
John's coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
And Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
We're Team Shute, and we're glad you've joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond sound bites and highlight reels.
Hello, I'm Matt Bush, the news director for Blue Ridge Public Radio, and I help the Mount Shoops produce Going Deep. This is our 50th episode. Well, the 50th episode of this version of the show. Prior to moving to Asheville, John and Marcia did Going Deep in West Lafayette, Indiana, out of the studios of WBAA. As we look back at our shows that have come out of BPR's studios, we first talk about how our hosts ended up in Western North Carolina, which is hours away from the nearest professional or major college football team.
Well, my job brought us here, but it was a bit more of a story. It might be interesting to hear. We might have a little different versions of it. But John and I, you know, had spent our entire marriage in big-time football, and it was at North Carolina that we really kind of woke up and became advocates for players' rights. So when John took the job as offensive coordinator at Purdue, there was no turning back. There was no unseeing what we had seen. So when we got to Purdue, we arrived as advocates, as activists. We arrived as people with questions and a critical eye toward some dynamics. And so John really... My book, Touchdowns for Jesus, came out the first year we were there. John went to bat for some players against the NCAA there. And as most people who listen to this show know, it ended with John getting fired at Purdue. And we really looked at each other after that and just said, we really can't do this anymore in good conscience. At the same time, it seemed that the same kind of opportunities that we were used to come in our way with John's career weren't. And we truly believe, and others agree with us, that our voices, a coach who's critical of some of the kind of systemic parts of the game, really aren't welcome at that level of the game. And so John said, you know, why don't you get a job? And I was like, well, I mean, I was working at the time, but hadn't had a job that could have supported our family for our whole marriage because we were kind of moving a lot and I was piecing things together. And this job, this call, that's what we call it in the ministry, at Grace Covenant Presbyterian Church, was really an amazing thing, how that all came up. I was very dubious as to whether I could get a position in a church as a senior pastor in the Presbyterian Church USA, because for 10 years I had been so outspoken about things like racism and gender identity and sexuality, things that the church was dealing with, the larger church was dealing with in a not very healthy way sometimes. So When I received the call to come to Grace Covenant, it did feel like an answer to prayer. It was a great opportunity for me professionally, an amazing congregation. And also it was a place where we could come and John could totally switch gears. There wasn't a professional football team here. There isn't a college football team here. And we've been here 3 years now, and I would say, maybe John would say differently, we're just finally settling into, this is our life, this is who we are. And I think, John, you finally kind of come to peace about some of it too. That was a hard kind of wrenching exit, and we're just so grateful for this community in Asheville. It has been a wonderful place to heal and start over. And this show has been a big part of, like, how do we bring that past part of our life with integrity into who we are today. This show has been a huge part of that kind of thread from all those years that we spent in sports.
You know, definitely after leaving North Carolina and going to Purdue, I was a different person. And I did. I battled every step of the way with our athletic director, with our head coach. When I look back on it, I'm not surprised I got fired because I was fighting the NCAA for players to get eligible instead of just appeasing them. I was fighting our trainers and doctors for, you know, regarding head injuries when people that I recruited, their mothers were calling me. They weren't calling the coach. They weren't calling the AD. And so there were many issues that I was battling. But also, when we stepped back, I realized how much I really enjoyed being around our children as well. And I so wanted our son, you know, was in high school now. And
he was a junior.
He was a junior, and I so wanted to be a part of his life before he was gone. And I'm now so involved in our kids' lives in a way that I never have been before, and they'd probably roll their eyes at me saying that. But it feels so good to me. And that was a real part of the lure. And one of the reasons I so wanted to come to Asheville was, as Marcia said, there is no big-time sports here. If there was a team just sitting right here in town, I think it would have been a lot harder for me. In this show, whether it's a show on concussions or muscular Christianity or forced faith and crazy Bible studies or meeting players who, you know, I've loved and coached in the past, has really been a form of therapy in some ways for me. That one of the most comforting things is when a show is out there and someone comes up to me and says, you know, you were right. That's it's exactly like that. I'm so glad you said it, you know. And it is hard. It's hard to listen to all these shows. It's hard to know what we know and still be, you know, a college sports fan. It is hard.
Well, you're not really, are you?
No, I'm not.
Only an hour and a half to the southwest of Asheville is the best college program in the country in football right now. But we here seem so far away
from
it.
Insulated
from
it, yeah. I think it's the mountains. I think the mountains give people perspective on things. I really do. It humbles people, maybe.
So the story of the show really starting here at Blue Ridge Public Radio, and I'll try to keep it somewhat short, is that, John, you came to the station one morning, cold called the station essentially, and showed up and talked to our general manager, David Feingold, saying that you had done a show at your previous stop in West Lafayette. Around the same time, I started at the station in October of 2016, coming from Washington, D.C., and then there was a meeting of sorts where David introduced John and I was up at City Bakery on Biltmore Avenue, and we chatted and talked about what the potential was for a show. But what I most remember about that particular morning was I sat down and I hear John talk, and he then mentions he's from Oakmont and grew up right off the first tee at the Oakmont Country Club. John does not sound like he's from Oakmont. Now, Oakmont is just one turnpike exit in western PA up from where I grew up in outside of Pittsburgh. But it was very interesting. It was two people from virtually the same area talking, but neither of us sounds like we're really from there.
Right? Yeah, he lost
Which is,
that
and
accent.
I just want to say that's a good thing. It is sometimes not an attractive accent.
Sometimes you go back there and start talking like that.
It's from living with a Southerner for so many decades.
It is true. You know, it's an accent that kind of develops, yes.
It's like a little syrup. It just soaks into you.
I remember when we were living in Chicago and I was coaching with the Bears our first year there. In the first year, it snowed on Derby Day, the first Saturday in May. And so Marcia was crying.
I was bereft. But, I really was.
But a year later, as our son was learning to talk, he started talking and he had this Midwestern accent.
He said snack for snack.
Marcia's mother,
my mother was
from
visiting.
Deep Mississippi, was devastated.
She said, "You have to get him out of here now.
Move now."
So doing the show, this iteration of it, what sorts of things did you want to focus on when you started this up here in Western North Carolina and at different points in your lives than when you were in Indiana? What sorts of things did you really want the show to talk about and look at?
Really, the whole purpose of this show is to help people go underneath the superficial. I think one of the things that we learned in all those years is just how superficial the information is that people get through media. On broadcast, that there's this facade of what's happening, and that John and I both feel that people who are thinking, caring, discerning people are actually really interested in stories about people. We wanted to have players on so that people could learn more about them, like Maurice Clarett. I mean, he's an amazing human being, but people just know that little sound bite about him, that he was in jail or whatever, and that he didn't get into the NFL or whatever. And there's so much more to Maurice, such an amazing story. And we also wanted people to know more about the truth of things like concussions, things like the NCAA. Our lives were turned upside down by those truths. And we know how much people's lives are impacted every day by that, people we care about. So in a lot of ways, the show is a labor of love because we want players to be people who can thrive and be people who receive the dignity and respect that they deserve. And so I think at the beginning of the show here, there was definitely an activist, kind of bent to let's get stuff on here about NCAA. Let's get stuff in here on concussions. And those are really powerful shows. And then I think we've also really enjoyed time with people like Pat and Robinette and Maurice and, other people that we've been able to offer to the listeners, like, here, get to know this person. They are amazing, and you really can learn a lot from them. Those shows have really meant a lot to us.
One of my favorite things is when a listener says to me, "I listened to your show, and I never thought of it that way."
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, the fact that my wife was thrown out of a Bible study. Oh, wait, so... Yeah, muscular Christianity and how that fits in the world of sports. Or, a coach leaving a school and how complicated the recruitment of a Pat and Robinette really was. Or the fact that, here's two guys from the Fab Five, mm-hmm. Jimmy King and Ray Jackson, that are making hundreds of millions of dollars for so many people. And their electricity is turned out in the apartment that they're living in. Things like that. And you realize, oh, you mean they don't really have it great. Oh, you mean that is kind of forced on people. Oh, you mean, yeah, I could see why players should be able to transfer now if coaches are able to, just change jobs so willy-nilly. I've always appreciated that aspect. There's so many guests, I think, that we've had that have really, frankly, helped me see it as well through a way that, I hadn't thought of it that
right.
way. That's a pretty good thought.
I mean, changing the narrative on things like Colin Kaepernick. Let's get a Kevin Blackstone on here and let's talk about the history of black activism in sports. I mean, Kevin is like a walking history book, and he can tell us things and he can frame it for people in a way that they're like, oh, this is not just about Colin Kaepernick. This is about generations of people of color you know, using this platform to say, look, America, look what's happening. Look what it's like to be Black in this country. I mean, shows like that, we do. We hear from listeners about how it changed their perspective. It changed the narrative that they've always told themselves about players who use sports. You know, I remember one guy who just said, I always got so mad. I just thought, like, you know, this is supposed to be sports. We shouldn't be talking about politics. And then, you know, after our show with Kevin, he was like, I really never had the opportunity to kind of put it in that framework. And it's changed the way I think about it. That's what the show is for, I think.
And I think people like Kevin Blackstone, who are well known and people recognize his name, value what he has to say. But, you know, there's other people too. And one of my favorite shows was with, you know, Dr. Randall Balmer from mm-hmm. Dartmouth, who talked about the history of sports and, for instance, football and the schemes of offense in football and how they relate to
the military,
war at the time and military, or how baseball related to immigration, or how basketball developed in a cold weather place because they just needed something between those two sports.
And I just know that we also had in that episode, didn't get it on the air, but the discussion of hockey coming from vigilante violence.
Yeah.
Injustice.
Yes.
That would be one of the great behind the scenes or sort of like outtakes episodes would just be, that would be included in it. Because once he said that to me, I went, wow, you were so right. It totally is.
Yes.
Like, hey, you hit my guy. I'm coming after you.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I felt like a listener when I was talking, and I am a listener on the show as well, you know, but when he was talking, I'm like, that's so spot on. I never thought of that. And so bringing perspectives like that from people who much of the country may never have heard of,
right?
I thought was rewarding, is that the right word?
The stuff that the sociology and the sociological theories that Joseph Cooper unpacked for us, those things help people. They help people understand that something, the things that they think are happening aren't really what is happening. And I think that's where real social change happens. And I don't think it's because of going deep that the conversation has changed around NCAA and stuff. But I think we're two voices. And I think in the last 15 years, those voices have been growing and growing and growing. And I hope we've been some part of that. But the conversation is different now today around the NCAA than it was. And I mean, maybe we've had a tiny little ripple in that, I don't know. But if we've even had one little ounce of a difference in that, then it's been worth it.
I want to talk about also, and let listeners know, the dedication you have to this and the thought that you put into every episode when you do the interviews, when you talk to the people, you really try to show the humanity of it. But the openness you have with each other and about yourselves and about your lives and about the things you've struggled with, to me, really stands out. And just maybe a couple of examples of this. But one, you know, you were talking about one of the episodes that sticks out to me is the two episodes with Pat and Robinette. You did that interview here on a Saturday morning. You know, I was back in my office doing some other work for the station. I came back and it was a little more than an hour. You talked to him and all that. And Marcia, John just came in and said, give Marcia a bit of a time there because mm-hmm. the interview had been so emotional for both of you. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of needed some time to decompress. Yeah. And I just want listeners to know the amount of thought that you put into everything and how open you are about it mm-hmm. And how it affects you, I think, really, to me, stands out.
I mean, we kind of have, like, this processing that we do after shows, especially, the ones with Patton or former players, I think. They really hit us, and we miss them. We miss them being a part of our lives. And like with Patton, I think he was such a turning point person for us. He was the perfect player for John to coach. I mean, they were just such a good match, and it felt like the way that all went, it was almost like a premonition to us that like stuff's starting to kind of unravel a little bit. It's not, this is not a situation where, you know, when I think sometimes when things are good and when the energy's good, they work. Things, they happen. The way is made clear. And I feel like Patton was one of those kind of people in our lives where we realized, like, that's not what's happening here. It's much more complicated, and it was painful. It was so good to talk to Patton, but it was really, and I mean, I feel honored that we have a forum to share those stories with people, because I do think that's what's real about sports. That's what's real. People like Patton Robinette, and broken hearts and exciting moments, but also, you know, long-lasting loyalties and allegiances to people because you've been through something together.
To me, there's always been something incredibly intimate about the medium of radio. It's more intimate than reading a newspaper or watching a show on TV, because you get this picture in your own mind. And I've always said radio is to reading the novel as watching a show is to the movie. You know, on radio, you kind of get it in your own mind. And that intimacy, I think, has come through in a number of shows. And I really felt it with people like Heather Jackson and Jake Plummer, who were talking about cannabis. And Jake Plummer's this NFL quarterback, and Heather Jackson is this conservative Christian mother, and here these two people are the most formidable opponents for legalizing cannabis throughout.
No, proponents. You said opponents.
That, yeah, proponents. That happens often on the show, too. Marshall, correct me. Justifiably so, she corrects me.
And it was another thing of the show of saying, I know when we were discussing it and it made you write the values statements and all that sort of thing. So yeah. The show of taking sports and using it as a mirror to society. That was a show that really, we're in the midst of an opioid epidemic and addiction epidemic in the United States. And that show just underscored it perfectly because, as Jake, I think, said in that show to you, John, he said, you know, hey, you know, every time you're hurt or you're in the locker room, hey, they get a pill for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Isn't that true outside of the locker room, too,
yeah,
for people who have never played football?
That's right. That's right. And the whole history of marijuana in this country was how that show opened. And that is echoing all over the place now in the opioid conversation.
As we begin to wrap up show number 50, what might the next 50 want to look at? What really interests you right now?
That's a great question. I feel like there's been like this rapid fire of legislation. And again, as the conversation amplifies around the NCAA, I'd love to kind of bring listeners up to date. Like, so where are all those official moves in legislatures? What's happening in terms of the NCAA? That's one show I'd like to do. I also notice that we've been very focused on men's sports a lot, and the show that we did on the women's soccer really kind of brought that up for me, that we haven't talked a lot about women's sports, and there's so many exciting people in women's sports these days. I would love to talk more about people like Serena Williams, but just being able to highlight some other sports besides the big ones.
And as I drove to Cleveland earlier this summer and got to listen to four or five shows on my long trip, the same thought struck me, because the last one I had heard at that time, the newest one we had done, was the one on the women's soccer team. And I went, probably should get a little bit more on that.
Yeah.
This might be me and me needing to broaden my own thoughts on this and all this sort of stuff. And I absolutely correct, Marcia.
We should do a show on cross-country running.
I'd love it.
And a few who runs Marcia
cross country. Marcia is a new assistant coach.
Coaching the girls.
Coaching the girls team at AC Reynolds Cross Country. Things that have like really interest me is what's fair and unfair. When is it just gaining a competitive advantage, and when do you cross that line to, actually, that's not fair? Whether it's Lance Armstrong pumping his own blood back into his body in the Tour de France, or Tommy John surgery or LASIK surgery in baseball, or even with regards to now in sports, when are transgender people able to compete in the men's side or in the women's side of things? And so that element of fairness and what's a competitive advantage and what is not is something that has interested me and I'd like to dig into.
I also think we've talked several times about maybe doing some more on the way club sports and the kind of business of sports for kids has changed. Soccer, lacrosse, swimming, baseball, softball, volleyball, all of those sports now have a club system, and school teams have been de-emphasized. And a lot of that is because of the kind of carrot out there about scholarships and things like that. And I, as a parent, you know, would love to do more on that kind of industry of sports and how that impacts families. I see it a lot in the church, how families are like, oh, we can't come to church on Sundays because we've got travel soccer or whatever, and how much a part of families' lives that stuff is now. It's not just Saturday mornings. It's whole weekends. It's thousands and thousands of dollars invested in private trainers and club teams. That's worth a look at, you know, who is benefiting from that? Where did that come from? And does it ever really result in, you know, anything that makes all that worth it? You know, what kind of return are people getting on those investments? I think that would be an interesting show.
Thank you for 50 shows.
Thank you for 50 shows.
Well, thank you for letting me come on the journey with you through this. I can tell you, as not only someone who's the, you know, the producer of the show, but also someone who is a big listener of the show too, how much it has changed how I view sports and all that. And I shared a bit with you on it. It's not that it's taken things away from me, but it has certainly made me absolutely reevaluate fandom, and particularly college fandom. Mm-hmm. And it's really tough for me now to watch college sports and not feel dirty about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally okay. I think there's some people who are like, oh, you robbed me of something, or this takes it away. Like, no, it just woke me up to the fact that this is a really dirty thing that you watch,
right,
when there are guys who aren't getting paid and, you know, there are coaches making millions of dollars.
Yeah, and I mean, I appreciate your willingness to be present and to actually, you know, like, let it impact you. I think that is another mirror of how the approach that this show is taking mirrors the work that we're having to do as a larger culture on things like race, on things like gender, on things like our economic system. The narrative that we've been taught and told is distorted. And there is a degree into which we've tipped into a new cultural moment in which a critical mass of people are saying, you know what? I don't think the same way that I used to. I'm learning things that really disrupt this way that I was raised or this way that I was formed. And so your openness to that is a good model for all of us as Americans who are, you know, there are several narratives that are being rewritten for us these days.
It's okay to have your beliefs challenged.
It is.
It's my thought. If they change, then it meant your beliefs weren't that strong to begin with,
that's
or they
right.
were wrong.
And we can all get through it, and we can all be better for it. And we have the stamina to do that.
You've been listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century, from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina.
Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. And make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @ShoopsGoingDeep.